Welcome to the Pain to Power podcast, where we have engaging, informed, and interesting conversations on topics including women's health, the menstrual cycle, chronic pain, trauma, the nervous system, relationships, and feminism. I'm Lisa Dion. I'm a women's health coach, facilitator, and educator, supporting you on your journey of healing, recovery, and moving into a place of personal power in your body and in your life. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 57 of the From Pain to Power podcast. And today I have a very special guest with me and a friend, well, a new friend. So I have Plone Elsa Andriessen with me. Plone is a menstrual cycle awareness facilitator and coach. She hosts the Bloody Practical platform to support people in improving their cycle experience in a hands-on way. She also works as a facilitator and learning designer in the human rights spheres. And Plone was a graduate of my 2021 menstrual cycle coaching and professional training. And yeah, so that's been maybe 2 years now since we've known each other, Plone. So you're very welcome on the podcast. It's great to have you.
Thank you, Lisa. I'm so excited to be here. Just before I logged on, I was like, wow, I'm actually a bit nervous for this. I used to host podcasts myself, and that's such a different perspective than kind of like joining as a guest. So I'm excited. Yeah, good to be here.
Yeah, we'll look after you out here, don't worry.
I have no doubt.
Yeah, no, it's really great to have you. And I was just saying to Plone there at the start, like, that we can't be chatting too much off mic at the start because we'll miss all the good bits. So I just went in and clicked record and caught her off guard a little bit. So yeah, apologies.
Heads first, let's go. Let's do it.
Yeah, I was like, I get all this good information, you know. So how are you doing today? How's life? How are you feeling?
Good, thank you. Yeah, today, the day that we're recording is, it's a Friday, so it's like, I'm happy it's almost weekend. I had a great week. I just hosted my first workshop on the Bloody Practical platform, My Cycle and Me, and that's been really exciting. So yeah, I'm feeling good.
Yeah. God, amazing, Plone. And congrats on the, I've been following you on social media. Plone has a really, really lovely Instagram, which I'll link in the show notes. And yeah, your reels are really fun and inspiring.
Thank you.
So it's great to see you. Yeah, I know, they're great. They're really good. And they're really you as well.
Right.
You know, like, they're really like your personality. Yeah. And anyway, well, I want to introduce what we're going to talk about today, actually, before we kind of start chatting. But today, and it's funny because we had a bit of a chat about what we're going to talk about, and we couldn't really get to the crux of it, but I'm sure it will, we're going to like flow with this conversation because there's so many things that Plone and I can discuss. But really what we're thinking is this piece around the art of facilitation, which is what Plone has so much experience in, which is something I do as well. Then the learning design process. So that's an interesting term even, and I'd love to unpack that with you as well. And then that intersection of being a facilitator of, you know, wellness, health work, in this case, menstrual cycle work. And then also, you know, that the intersection between the professional and the personal, which we're always dancing with and trying to figure out, you know, how to hold ourselves well in this work. And I know a lot of my listeners are also facilitating and teaching and designing and or thinking about getting into that space, or coaching or doing therapy or whatever. And yeah, it's a whole world, isn't it, Plone? That the, like, your world of design,
yeah,
really.
Literally, I was just thinking, well, you're saying that the personal and the professional, and what you mentioned before about my Instagram being so me and my personality. And I want it to be like that because that's also the way I enjoy creating and facilitating and working. But it's true that at times that also means that for me, it's kind of unclear or difficult to kind of create those boundaries, like what's the personal, what's the professional, right? So it's an ongoing discussion with myself and a journey. But yeah, it's interesting.
So what would be like because I know we can probably both contribute to this part, like what would be examples of things that you have to consider in terms of implications on that boundary between being a facilitator and a designer and then your personal, because you're not designing like clothing or, well, maybe you are designing clothing. You design clothing?
Not yet.
you
not yet.
You know, you're not. Yeah, not yet. I mean, I would put it to her that she probably would. Yeah. But like what I'm saying is that the stuff that you are working in also is relevant on in your personal life. And it's the same for me.
Yes.
Right. So kind of like when we speak to that, what are the things we have to be mindful of in that intersection?
Yeah, I think it needs to be really clear, at least what I really use in my design work. So the learning design, the kind of learning experiences, is that you have really clear who you're designing it for and what their objectives are. Because if you don't have that clear from the beginning, you can get really easily kind of sucked in and start doing it from your own perspective, which kind of results into you not being able to, you won't reach the people because it's actually not designed for the people, but it's designed for yourself. Mm-hmm. So, and you get this disappointment by not reaching the people, and you're going to then judge, like blame yourself for it because it was made for you. So for you, it made sense, but for the people that you're actually trying to reach, it just didn't land. I don't know if that's clear.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And it's hard to do that sometimes, isn't it? When you're so in your work, you know, and it's hard to, and you're in your work and then there's that personal piece and then you have to step outside of yourself and think about, this is relevant for me, but it might not be helpful or relevant to my audience or client.
That. And then there's also the part of like you personally thinking that a particular thing would be a good next step. But then it's not on you to suggest that next step, or not on you to facilitate that. You know, it kind of has to come from the person themselves if they truly want to go through that learning experience.
Interesting. Yeah. And that's where things like market research and stuff comes in, and getting feedback from your audience. And yeah, that's an interesting thing. Like, yeah, I can relate to that in my own courses, that sometimes there's something that I would like to do or change. But if it doesn't make sense for the people I'm doing it for, then I have to consider, is this something just for me? Will I do that? And what implications does that have? Yeah. Okay. Well, I've gone into the deep end already again here. So would you tell us about you and your background, and then walk us into the journey of Buddy Practical? All right.
God, how far back do we want to go?
Well, in your bio, you have learning designer in the human rights sphere. So like, for people who don't know what that is, like, what does that mean exactly?
I have a background in human rights and conflict studies, and then specifically on creating justice mechanisms in post-conflict studies. And I loved studying that. I loved doing all of that. But the jobs that kind of came after my studies, I just couldn't really relate to those. I just didn't feel like I wanted to be in those positions, often with NGOs or other governmental organizations. So I really started just trying out different things. And this is how I kind of ended up in facilitation, because I always knew I loved to work with people. I sometimes love to entertain, but at the same time, I love to have fun, but with a purpose. And I started hosting women's circles. And then I started this course on how to design such a setting, because there's one thing of hosting something or facilitating a session, and there's another thing of really designing such a session. I never really realized they're so different, but they really are. Some people are not really interested in the design, which I can understand. Some people just want to be with the people. They want to get like an outline and just do it. But I'm also really interested in the theory behind it. So that's kind of how I got into the whole theory and the practice. And I work a lot with NGOs on the thematics that I did study. So I work a lot on gender, on conflict, and it can be that I make courses for organizations. It can be that organizations want to change some of their strategies, and then I facilitate that process of them doing so. So I take away the burden of the planning, the organizing, and how does it look like, so they can just focus on the actual content or the actual like product that they want to create or change or develop.
That's fascinating. Yeah, that's a really, really helpful explanation. And so going back to what you said there, the theory of course design. Tell us about that.
Cool one. So I usually design most of my courses or workshop or anything from the theory of behavioral change. So the idea is that you start at one point and you want to reach at another point. And usually that always contains a component of behavior. And the whole idea is that people are only willing to go through that process to change their behavior if there are certain requirements. For example, people have to be in a place of pain. It doesn't have to be literal pain, like physical pain, but it has to be a difficult situation that is directly affecting their way of life, or their pleasure, or making their life more difficult. And at the same time, I think it's something we don't necessarily want to admit that often, but people do only want to change if they do see that there is a direct, or at least a gain to it. So they truly understand and believe that if they change, it will get better. So the first part of the process design is like, are those people in that place, or do you need to first get them to that place of wanting to make the change?
Yeah, my supervisor, Sheila, she talks about that, the point of change. Like there's like a point, and you meet people at that place of the point, and you're just one change maker in their journey of many changes in life, right? Like, I'm never going to be the person that people need for everything. You know, it's just that one place in their life. And so to think about when you're thinking about that from a business, marketing, design thinking point of view, that's what you're thinking. You're thinking where are they on the, like the linear path or something, or
steps, range, the different levels. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you need to go through in certain steps in order to want to make a change. Yeah. And then in order to make that change, you also need to go through certain steps. So there's those two elements to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm selfishly thinking about my own business, which I hope everyone listening is thinking about their own work too, you know, because it's like how you make sense of this stuff, because this is very theoretical. But when you think of examples, it really helps. So for me, Plone, like an example is a lot of the clients who I work with on a one-to-one level have been around the block a lot, and they have lost hope or faith in the systems and healthcare people and wellness people. And so they come, perhaps, you know, it's hard for them to trust a new person, obviously, because they might have been let down. And that's the thing with the menstrual cycle. A lot of us, as you and I both know, like we have that experience of being around the block and trying things, and am I going to throw money at another thing?
No, exactly. And I think indeed, to make it a bit more concrete, what you're saying makes a lot of sense. And if you look at those two elements of being in a place of pain and knowing that if you change it, it will get better, in a way you would say that many menstruating people are in that situation, right? Because many people do have pain in some sort. It can be PMS, or it can be actual physical pain or heavy bleeding, all of that. So it is affecting their lives. And they also do know that if it gets better, it will improve their life. So I spent some time thinking, okay, so those two elements are there. So what is it that makes it difficult for them to join into that learning experience? And I think there's what you said, the systemic element that has made so many of us menstruating people believe that it is normal for to be in that situation and that there is no way of changing. And at the same time, there might not be that many resources or accessible resources for people to jump into these experiences. I don't know how you see that.
Well, I tell you, I feel like this is a great conversation because I've been thinking about this for a long time and I've been waiting for people to join me in this chat in my head, right? So now this makes sense to me because the way your language around this stuff is different to how, because I haven't really had the language like for this particular work, but I've been thinking all the same stuff now that you're speaking it aloud. I'm like, oh yeah, this is everything I think about all the time. So really hopefully my other graduates from the course from your, you know, from your year and this year are listening to this podcast, you know, and really thinking about how we can design and thinking about where those clients are, where that audience is at in their level of awareness and meeting them there. And where do you, because you also have a choice in where you want to meet people as like, you know, you get to choose your ideal client's situation, you know. What was I going to say? What I was going to say was, because you kind of asked me just there, how do I see it? I think there's a few pieces to it. Yes, so there's that kind of normalizing of pain, social normalizing. But I think that's getting a lot better because there is a public narrative of, you know, like debilitating period pain isn't normal. But what I also think is that, because you talked about the requirements for people to, like, say, buy into the course, right, is that there needs to be a pain situation, physical or whatever. They want something to change, yeah. Right? There's some kind of suffering happening. And then the second piece being that there needs to be
the gain.
They
gain something out of it,
There needs to be a gain in the change. But the I think therein lies one of the issues, is because there are no guarantees in our work. There are no guarantees in, if you do menstrual cycle awareness, you're going to feel better, because lots of people do it and they still suffer. And then the other part of that is, there's a third piece, and I think this is the one I think about a lot, is that a lot of women do it themselves.
Do it themselves?
They do, they want to learn, they might buy a book, yeah. Or do a self-paced course, or, you know, they'll want to do something themselves. So that's one thing. And I know I fit into that category a lot as well. And then the last one is, people see a lot of people want sort of a more tangible approach. So they'll, like, I often get, well, maybe not now, but in the past I was asked a lot, like, oh, like, what is it, Lisa, that you do? Do you give herbs, or do you give homeopathy, or do you, like, prescribe some kind of, like, wellness, you know, protocol? And I kind of do, like, a little bit of the protocol to start, but that's not like what I do. And I don't do herbs and homeopathy. And if you're interested in that, I have people I can send you on to, loads of people who are really good at that. I can refer you on to. But no, that isn't what I do. And so it can be kind of there's an intangible nature as well to the work you and I both do, and that the coaching side of the more psychological, emotional, mental health side of things isn't as clearly understood as well. So there's lots of reasons, I think, why it can be hard to meet people in that place.
I agree with you. It is hard to kind of not being able to offer a guarantee. Well, as you said, there is none. I think that within the process of learning, even though it's not as tangible, there are elements that you can offer. And those are still tangible elements. And I think I'm thinking about skills, and I'm thinking about knowledge, and I'm thinking about awareness and providing support in getting those. I think that is really where I try to focus my work on and try to communicate that. I mean, I'm trying to start to do that, because I also encounter this problem of people kind of wanting to be like, yeah, okay, but, like, tell me what to do, or tell me the solution. And I understand, I used to be like that, right? I used to be Googling this, like, the solution, and I want it to be better and all of that. So I get it. And it's a journey of trying to reach people that you want to reach. And at the same time, don't make any false promises that will kind of lure them in, right? Yeah, it was really bluntly said, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I love that. No, it's fine. No, this is really interesting, Plone. Yeah, no, it is. It's complex stuff. And the thing, the nature of our work is, it's very new. You know, people don't, like, it's, you know, it's only becoming kind of common. Well, it's not commonplace. You know, it's still very new. And like I said, a lot of people who've tried a lot of things before would have spent money on things. And, you know, well, maybe compared to other menstrual cycle coaches, my work might be slightly different, because I do specialize in people who have tried a lot of things and gone to a lot of places and that kind of thing. But do you know, the funny thing is, Flynn, and you probably see this as well, even though I can't guarantee any results, when I do see results in clients, they happen very quickly. Like, after 2 or 3 sessions, they start to see like huge changes because of what you're saying, the awareness.
Yeah.
The awareness, and they start to learn things that they never knew, and the skills and I'm not talking about, like, dietary stuff, because I think that is really helpful and I do think that is important to learn, but, like, you can learn that stuff yourself, you know, and make a few changes. But there's other things that you and I also bring into our work, that more the relational side, right? And learning to understand your seasons and the gender lens. I know that's a big piece in your work as well. Like, you know.
No, I think you're pinpointing something really interesting there, and it makes me laugh, because sometimes when people try and ask me, like, okay, so what is it that really helped you or really made a difference for you? And then I kind of try to come up with this, you know, tangible, like, sexy answer. But in the end, it's like this most unsexy answer of just being like, the knowing, or, like, the being aware of it makes such an impact. Like, that and of itself already leads to change. But it's so hard to kind of share that with people. And it's often kind of lost in translation, and that's too bad.
That's it. Like you said, the thing is, right, I don't buy, even myself, I sell awareness work and process work, right? As in, that's what I do, right? But I don't say that in my market. Like, I'm not saying to people, oh, when we work together, we're going to be doing loads of, like, and even because I sell, like, I don't even buy that stuff. Like, when I buy, say, if I was to sign up to like a leadership course or some kind of course, or I don't know, something, and behind, like, once you get in the door, it's mostly awareness work, because they're the types of people I choose to work with, right? But like, they're not selling me, oh, hey, you're going to become really aware of all your blind spots and your unconscious biases and all this stuff. Yeah. Like, that's not like what I'm like, you know? So it's also thinking about, what is it that we're like, the process is different to what it is that we're marketing. And you have to make it clear to people, like, that, you know, the language we use in our copywriting is important. And it's important to also meet people where they're at in terms of their vocabulary on that particular topic. You know, so that's kind of what. Okay, so we've cracked this one.
Interesting. We could go on.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to, because you mentioned your workshop there. What was it called again? My Cycle and Me.
Yeah,
I love that title.
Yeah.
Mm.
I was so excited, and I really enjoyed it hosting it. Of course, I was nervous because I facilitate a lot. You know, it's what I do, but usually it's for other organizations. We work with their materials, you know, it's about their product or their vision and mission and all of that. And now suddenly it was mine. So here again is that part of like the personal, right? That's kind of into this part of my work. Mm. So it's definitely kind of putting myself out there. So that was, for me personally, I was nervous but excited. And as soon as we started, it was really fun. And it was really this balance between kind of introducing the people to the menstrual cycle as a whole and kind of the whole awareness work around it, so some of the process work, and then really just practicing with what you can do to gain that awareness. So really just actively thinking about it in a way that they had never done, or actively writing about it or drawing about it in a way that they usually don't. And it sounds really simple, and it's like simple exercises, but it kind of helps people look at their cycle, their periods, from a different perspective. And that kind of, I think, stimulates this idea of looking at your cycle. Yeah, or like starting to gain more awareness towards it, you know?
Yeah. That sounds fab. Did you have people online from different countries?
Lovely. I was online, it was in English. I like facilitating online. And I think by now I'm also quite able to still create an interactive environment, right? Because that's the danger. And you know it as well, like your courses are also online. The danger is that it becomes very one-way direction, which I think in terms of wanting to learn something is never the best way.
No. Yeah, no, that's, yeah. I do a lot of, I have probably even more interaction this year in my group. Yeah, I think it's actually really important when it comes to the menstrual cycle, because we're unlearning patriarchal structures. And like, if we just, you know, go in with that guru mentality of like, I'm the teacher that knows everything and here's everything you need to do with your body, it's just the same shit as before. You know, just with the guy, like, under the guise of menstrual cycle awareness, but it's still like that top down power over model. You know, and so I try my best to be like, obviously, like, as a facilitator, you are in a position of authority and leadership, and that's different, but it's that finding that boundary and that balance, isn't it, of like interaction and
sending.
Did you say transcending
information? But
it's and how is it that they're learning? Are they learning through conversation with other people, or is it learning from you, and or is it a mixture, or is it from through sharing in the group?
That's a good question. Because in a way, and I'm curious also how you do it, because you work with a group of people and there's many different ways of learning, right? And especially in an online setting, how do you usually kind of go about this thing of, okay, some people prefer to listen and write and take notes, and other people prefer to just talk with other people or start, try things out. I don't know, how do you facilitate that within a course or within a workshop?
Yeah, that's a good question. I do consider myself in that too. Like I do you know something that I don't like doing? I don't really like getting on camera and pre-recording content. So I have a good bit of that in my courses, but I don't really put a lot of emphasis on that because I just don't really I find that very draining to do. I really like teaching live. So I'll teach live, even if it's the repeat every year, but I feel like I'm connecting with the group when I'm doing a live teaching. And it'll depend on whether I'm doing a once-off workshop or a long-term process. It's like, you know, a totally different dynamic. But in most of my work is long-term. And I would have a mixture. Like I'd have a mixture of like lectures and teaching and then, you know, little exercises, breakout rooms, conversations. And I have in my course, I have like the process group as well, like last year. So my lecture is an hour bigger than my process groups are really small. And I try my best to just let the group talk and share and discuss things in the process group with each other. Because, you know, when we do that as facilitators, we're sharing that power. Mm-hmm. And there are experiences that are relevant to this work that I don't have personal lived experience of. And so I will very intentionally hand the talking stick to the people in the room who have those experiences or who think might, you know, for example, being a mother. That came up in our group, and I have no lived experience of that except for that my mom's a mom and I'm her daughter. That's like the only, you know, and my like I have nephews, but I'm not a mom, and so that's not for me to speak about from that experience, you know. So and I suppose here's like this will be an interesting thing. I'd love to get your input on this. Is that when you do that, like it could be on the surface a cleaner experience to just be very structured and like. You or I do all the talking for this long and then there's just a Q&A at the end and that's it. But I find that when you don't do that, then there is more space for talking and discussing, which is great. And it does allow for a much richer experience. However, it can sometimes be a bit messy in terms of timekeeping and taking up space and certain people maybe not stepping up and speaking and other people taking the floor for a lot longer and personalities kind of show themselves, you know?
No, I think you're really pointing out like a really important challenge, so to say, to online or just in general facilitation. And I noticed this, of course, in my work with like practical, but also with international NGOs that they want it to be an inclusive process and they want people to be able to have their say. But what many people often then immediately think about is that they have to speak up. But same as people learning different, people also have different ways of and preferences of voicing themselves. So I think as a facilitator, it is our responsibility to allow for those different ways of providing your perspective and your experiences, because I completely agree that sometimes lived experiences, well, not sometimes, oftentimes is like such a valuable addition to whatever you're trying to do, right? And as a facilitator, you're just hosting the space for those lived experiences to be there. But I think many people are really comfortable with speaking up, and some people actually rather maybe write about it or maybe even present about it using completely a different medium. Or I like to work, for example, with metaphors or colors, because the thematics that we're working on in the menstrual cycle, it can sometimes be quite emotional for people and difficult to just share with those words, but they do maybe want to share. So kind of a way to ease into that might be using metaphors or pictures or representations of those experiences. And that way I guess I try to kind of divide the space for people to provide that input in a preferred way.
That sounds gorgeous, Plone. Really creative. It's lovely. Yeah. So, and it's the thing is, it's as a facilitator, it's hard to create space for all of those, you know, all of those things. But to have a bit of a mixture is,
of course,
helpful.
It depends on the setting and what you can do and the objectives of the experience, of course, again. And if you just like you offer a lot of process work, it's also not about everyone speaking up every time. right? Because sometimes you just don't feel like it, or you feel like at this moment there's just not the space to voice your opinion. Mm. And that's completely fine. And I think that should also be okay. Like, for something to be participatory means that people can also decide to not be participating in a way.
Yeah, I love that. I remember my supervisor once said to me, the perception of how people engage with your course isn't the reality. Like, as in, someone could just engage a little bit, but have a huge like takeaway from it, or it could really alter the course of their life compared to the person who shows up every for every class. And I thought that was really interesting, because when I first started this work, I used to think, oh, like, I'm doing something wrong, you know, because that person isn't coming or whatever, you know. She was like, you're not responsible for that. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, so true. I think one of my mentors also always used to say is like the 80-20 rule. Like, if you just have an impact on 20%, then it's been like a massive success in a way.
Yeah, 20% of the participants.
Like, you get people to participate. Oh, that's good. But if only two people take something away for it and can actually implement their lives, that's already...
Oh, that's very generous on you. I love that. It's like, just have to influence 20%.
But I think we also need to... No, of course you want to have more, but we also need to kind of stay aware of who we are and what we can do. And not to be hard on ourselves on that either, I think.
It's so interesting. I have conversations with people who are new in this work, and I know myself when I was there that inner critic can really be strong, you know. And it's like you say, it is scary stepping into the room with people, with humans. We're very complex creatures, you know, and then like talking about this topic that's so new and in such a new way. And I think for me, my learning has really been like, this isn't really about me, you know, like, it's not really, you know, like, all I can do is my best and facilitate their process and get the feedback, and I can improve on my skills. That's fine, like any job.
Yeah, so actually, good question. Let's turn it back to you. How do you cope with that personal professional boundary thing?
Yeah, the personal professional thing, I have to say, I've gotten really good at this. Like, I was saying, I'm really
about this a couple of times already. You definitely helped me a lot, so I feel like more people should hear this.
Yeah. It's like, I like, just, there's so much pressure for a lot of people who are doing menstrual cycle coaching. They feel, or any health coach, whatever, right? There's this sort of implied, I don't know where it comes from. I think it's some, sorry, excuse my French, but bullshit capitalist, you know, this idea that you have to have your shit together before you can facilitate or coach or do therapy or whatever the service is that you offer people. And that's actually ableist. I think that comes from that ableist mindset. And it's not helpful, because every person that you sit opposite has a completely different background, privilege, experience, resources, capacity to you. And so if you're someone who has a chronic health condition or a disability or something, you know, more on the extreme level, like, why would you deny yourself the permission and the human right to have a job, right, in a field of your choice? And so if the field happens to be in the wellness world, how is that different to like being an accountant, right? And then you need to make adjustments for yourself, for your body, and for your, you know, the needs you have in your body. And so that's how I see it. And that's one of the reasons why I don't want to also perpetuate that whole mentality. And so I've gotten, like, maybe I probably kind of do this too much, but I've really swung away from talking about my personal relationship with my menstrual cycle, except for like in little bits, you know. So I don't really want to use my story to sell my courses or my coaching, because really what I want to use to sell my services are my skills and my experience, not my, you know, up and down relationship with my period.
I understand that. I'm just curious, because I agree with that, and at the same time I also feel like for people it might be this really relatable element that,
well, you see, those that's are the snippets. It's true. Okay. And I think that is important. Like, I do get messages from people when I share personal stuff I do get like a lot of engagement on that, right? And so, and anyone does, but I really want to be careful that I'm not using that. I think the point I'm trying to make is that I'm not saying to people, oh, if you do what I do, then you'll get better. So that's the underlying message, is that what, like, there's lots of reasons for that. One is because I don't think that's helpful to my clients, but secondly, also to myself, because that puts a lot of pressure on me to keep myself like really well all the time, which isn't realistic. And I do have really bad days with my health and my menstrual cycle and other health elements, you know, as anyone does. And so it gives me full permission to be human and to have the flaws and to just, you know, not be perfect in my own wellness journey. And that takes a massive amount of pressure off me to just be a very flawed human being behind, you know, my business. And I get to decide what I choose to share with my audience and what I don't. And something I am quite careful with is, like, if something is still very raw, I would be very careful with sharing that, because I feel I would be quite a private person, and it takes me a while to like move through things sometimes, you know, and process emotions. And so I'd be very boundaried in terms of where I bring what. Sorry about that. We just seemed to lose connection, but we're back now. And I think I had just gone on a big rant about the intersection between personal and professional. And we just lost connection, so we're just gathering our thoughts again. But yeah, that's what I would say about that. And I think it's really important that we protect ourselves, our personal selves, that we protect what our clients are buying into, you know, in this work.
I completely agree, and I'm trying to think of everything else you just said before. And one thing that I think that really resonated with me was this part of like just allowing yourself to be a flawed human being, or just in a way just being human being, right? That with all that we are and all that we got. And I've not been online for so long with Bloody Practical, and it's definitely something I'm learning along the way, you know, because in a way you want it to be ready, you want it to be everything that you have in mind for it to be, but it's okay that it's not. It's still okay. I am who I am, and I'm still offering these services, and it's still reaching people that I wanted to reach, and it's okay.
That's fantastic, Flown. I think for the sustainability of your business, we have to have that strong relationship with our humanity, don't we? And like, if we don't have a relationship with our humanity, what are we expecting of our clients in this work?
So true.
So that's how I see it. It's like, if I'm expecting my clients to do things and be in a certain way in themselves, then I have to also, like, I have to do that too, you know?
Do that and allow yourself,
And I do think, like, on an unconscious level, that helps the work. I mightn't necessarily always be saying those words, but if it's in you and you're sitting opposite someone, they feel that, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely.
It's that, it's that containment piece that, you know, that you kind of know when, like, I know my current therapist who I go to once a month, she obviously doesn't talk about her personal life, you know, in therapy, but I get the sense that she has lived experience of some of the stuff I'm talking about, you know, and it's like, you just sort of, I don't know, I just get the sense, I just feel really heard when I'm talking to her. And,
right. And
And
I think that's also what you said before, kind of this human element, without necessarily having to share your personal story, you can still sit there as a human being, and not just as the professional there telling you or showing you how to do it. No, you're just still leveling with these people. Like, I'm also just a human being, you are, and therefore you can connect and share that experience without creating this disbalance, right?
Yeah. And that takes so much pressure off you as a facilitator and educator, doesn't
it? Yeah, it's true. You just got to be there often. There's a lot more to it, but also, continue.
No, you have had a journey, because what I love about your work, seeing it come out now, Plone, is that you've really taken your time in choosing when to launch and when to step into this work for various reasons. So I was wondering if you wanted to chat about that for a minute.
Definitely. I mean, I guess on my own journey of my relationship with my cycle, there's always been this whole question of like, wow, if I didn't know all of this, I'm like a privileged woman with all the education and all the opportunities and all of that. And it's been so hard for me to get to the path to improve my relationship with my cycle. And seeing, I don't know, like hearing once I would share that with people, there was so much resemblance in wanting to find those places where you could get that support or where you get could get that knowledge. I was like, I was just really frustrated. I was like, how can it not be there, right? Like, or like not enough. And then I found you amongst other things. And I think the course and the work that I've done with you has been great and has in a way just fed that frustration with me, but also that passion to also share that with other people, because I just see how much of a change it has had in my life of improving my relationship with my cycle. And yeah, so that's just something I've been thinking about for like almost 2 years now. And then for a year I've been thinking, okay, so how, if I were to do that, how would I do it? How would I offer it into the world? And how would I be comfortable doing that? And I think a lot of that is also unconsciously you make the decisions that make sense. You like you go through the work, and I did a fellowship on setting up a business, and I talked a lot with you. I did a process work and talked with other people. I did market research and everything. But I think it was literally almost set up and ready to go. I had the name, I had the brand package and all of that. But I don't think it was until the week before I already promised everyone that I was going to launch that I really got to the point, like, why am I doing this and what do I want this place to be? And it was quite hard because I had in my mind I wanted to launch a while ago. Now, retrospectively, I'm happy I didn't. But it is a bit of a journey, kind of allowing yourself to just sit with that uncomfortable feeling or that nagging feeling like, okay, I want to and I'm ready, but it just doesn't feel like I physically, emotionally, spiritually am there to just give it everything it needed to just get out into the world. So yeah, it really took me a couple months to launch. And I think also good to add that maybe I've been also a bit unrealistic. I was moving, I was like getting into a new apartment and all of that. And then I planned the launch in that same month. And that, you know, like looking back, that's just also me being a human being. But yeah, I took my time and I'm really happy I launched now. And I really enjoy it.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good to hear, Clone. That's so good to hear, because I know how much work you've put in that inner work and the background work and marketing and all that, and or branding rather.
Yeah.
Interesting about the move. Why do people not tell you like how intense that is?
Why you're going through it right now as we speak.
Yeah, I'm going through it right now. Boxes everywhere.
Yeah.
And I was really busy in work this week, like so busy. And then I just had like, I was literally like climbing over things in my office, you know, it was just like, okay, where's the tea? Where's the kettle? I just need some food.
Right. I love you it. Know? You're sitting in between boxes and I'm sitting in my bedroom because the rest of my apartment is too empty. So the sound would be too hollow. So let's all just be real here for a second.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's this thing. It always takes more of you than you think. Time, energy.
I know.
Mental capacity. Money.
I love that plan. It's a really good reminder because I know you've journeyed your path with burnout in the past, and like what I'm really seeing in you, and just on the back what you have just shared there as well, is like really taking your time and pacing yourself. And like, yes, there is no right time and there might be life circumstances to navigate, but that it is also important to, with this work, is to to take your time and to not rush into it and to not put all that pressure on yourself that you have to have everything ready to go the minute you graduate from a particular course. You know,
yeah it's true. I think I can say I'm proud of that as well, because as you said, coming from a burnout and having lived my life at a very fast pace for a very long time, it's an ongoing struggle of taking it easy and letting things just happen, or given the time it's clearly need, instead of trying to force it. So, yeah. And I think what you said, because in a way you think, or you're programmed to think, oh, I did this course, so now I can get going. And in a way it's true. But as it is, it's also so clearly process work. Sometimes things don't click until a long time after, or things need to fall into place. And as you said, it's your least favorite part of like recording these videos. Fair. And I think throughout the course, I didn't even watch them all. But now I go back to them. Because so maybe that's good for you too. it's really useful.
Yeah,
stop doing that.
Yeah,
well, maybe it's just some of them. because it's a reference point, I think, and it can, yeah, start a whole process. It doesn't end by the time you graduate, in a way. So therefore, it's okay to not immediately jump into something else.
Yeah, no, that is important, isn't it? To really, to allow yourself that space and time. So when you say that you have done that and that you're proud of it, because I know a lot of people, myself included, that's not easy to do, Plown. Like, and I've seen your journey from the other side as a little bit. And like, for other people listening to this who are also trying to not push and force something, what advice do you have, if any, or even just like an insight into your experience of it?
that's a good question. So to not rush things, it's an ongoing struggle, I'm not gonna lie. I think for me it's actually not necessarily focusing on that part, but more on the other things that I need around it. So there's this thing like I want to do A, so I want to start Bloody Practical like yesterday, right? I want to do it ASAP. That's just the thing that I naturally am inclined to go for. But now after my whole burnout experience, I also learned, okay, but in order to be happy, I also need to make sure that I have at least 2 evenings or 3 evenings per week by myself. I also need to have enough moments of fun. I need to actually book my holidays in advance. Otherwise, I find a way to not go on holiday. So it's, like self-sabotage. So I guess for me, the thing is not so much to focus on slowing down that one thing, because maybe that actually puts a lot more pressure on that particular thing. But finding kind of comfort in knowing, in that you now know what you need to be healthy and comfortable in life, and sticking to that. And those can be really practical things. For me, it's also reading, just making sure I have a book ready, that if I feel uncomfortable, that I can just read a really easy novel, and because I love it. Cooking. So creating the system for yourself with daily activities or daily things that you know are just as important as launching Bloody Practical. Like, they cannot go, one cannot go without the other.
I love that. It's really in alignment with what it is you're teaching, isn't it? Because it's, you're teaching people to get clear on their needs around their cycle.
Yeah.
And what it is they need to support themselves through the ups and the downs of the cycle.
Yeah.
And being, having that kind of non-negotiable relationship with the resources, like I'm hearing resourcing, like you're resourcing yourself, you know, and how important that is. And I think in our society, we don't really put the value on that, because we're thinking about, like you say, the outcome or the end result or whatever. But the secret is, the more resourced you are, the more chances you have of success and long-term sustainability in a creative project or business or whatever.
Yeah, I think so too. And yeah, to then link it to my life, I think I have more things, or created more things post burnout without a plan than I have in the first 23 years of my life. I've accomplished many things, but not from this moment from this place of creation and intent, like that I wanted to, or that I'm actually really proud of.
Like, you're nourished.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you feel you're not like burning out while you're doing it. You're not forcing a solution. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's such a different somatic experience, is to feel nourished doing a creative thing, than it is just on that like adrenaline all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And it's such a gift to yourself. And I do think when you do that, you're so in integrity with the work, because we're teaching that work to the clients, you know, we're supporting them. And like, you know, we're never going to get it. We're not going to be 100% of the time nourished all the time.
Definitely. I think that's, last week had a rough week. Like, it just happens. And there's days where I'm not happy with myself or everything that's going on. And I very also.
But you have the toolbox there.
Right.
And then you lean into it.
It's a toolbox. It's a menu. It's a whatever you want to be, you know,
a team, a pit stop team to keep you on the road.
Right? Exactly.
I say that to my boyfriend, Richard. I'm like, I need supervision and therapy and this, and this. And that keeps me on the road, you know, keeps me going.
Keep the will going.
Like, I bring my car to get a service every year. You know, I need the same.
Literally. You know? It all comes down to that. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so, okay, last question, I suppose, because I don't want to be keeping you too long, Plumas. We could talk forever.
I know.
Tell the listeners about your workshops. What have you got coming up? Who's it for? What's different about your work?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, tell us.
All right, so yeah, there's two more My Cycle ME workshops coming up before summer. I think the first one is the 2nd of May and the other the 30th of May. Those are planned already. And it's really for people who want start exploring their relationship with their cycle. So they know like, okay, I've been experiencing a lot of pain or difficulties and it's affecting my life. Or maybe you're on birth control and you're considering wanting to stop, but maybe you want a bit more of an understanding of what that could mean or what the cycle actually entails off birth control, but don't really know where to start and what tools you can use. So, and then throughout the workshop, we're really just going to give some information. I will be sending some things, but some knowledge, so to say, on the cycle and menstrual cycle awareness, on the seasons. But as we've been talking before, it's also a lot about starting to think differently about our cycles that we have for as long as we had them, right? Using a different angle, and also start practicing with literally tracking your cycle and what that can do and what that says about your cycle. So that's the workshop. And I'm also soon going to make menstrual cycle tracker available for people to buy and download. And if you buy it, you also kind of get access to this monthly tracker check-in. Well, which is just like an hour space for you to join in if you want to. Like maybe it's for you to kind of stay on track or to get started, or we can quickly analyze some of your findings or observations while tracking your cycle. So yeah, that's all soon.
Gorgeous. Yeah. That's so nice. How long are the workshops?
Workshops are an hour and a half.
An hour and a half. And they're online. So the 2nd and the 30th of May, this is 2023. And I'll put your, you've got links and stuff.
Yeah, like Instagram, website.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
And who is it for? What kind of people are welcome?
Menstruating people. Or like not even menstruating people, but people with a cycle. Uh-huh. I think, yeah, as I just said, for people who know that their cycle is affecting their life and they want to start building a better relationship with it.
So it could be for people who have pain and want to get more clarity, or even people, they mightn't have pain, but they just want to get better at being in that energetic flow.
Right. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Knowing the seasons and starting making use of the positive parts of every season. Because I think that's also a big part of my practice. It's not all bad and it's not all about improving the bad, but also starting to see the good from the other seasons and how can we actually use that good in our life.
Yeah, it's such a game changer, isn't it? Because I know myself, and the same as you, I used to burn out a lot at different points in my cycle every month. And now, well, I mean, not that I don't now, but it's just a lot less frequent. That inner spring for me was always a tough one after my period. I'd be so tired. And then obviously autumn. But yeah, this work is really, really helpful. Even if you make a few, I'm not going to spoil your workshops, but when you make a few tweaks, the benefits are huge.
For real. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're interested in that workshop, My Cycle and Me with Pallone, I really highly recommend it. Her spaces are so nourishing, so engaging and really safe. So do check her out. And her Instagram is in the show notes, Bloody Practical. Is that right? Okay. Anything else you want to say before we head off?
Well, thank you for having me here and for saying those nice words also about me and having another lovely chat. And I feel like I'm so ready to enter the weekend so inspired and full of energy. So thanks very much.
Yeah. Oh, you're so welcome, Plone, and you're welcome back anytime. I'm sure we'll chat again and about other topics. Right. But thank you for being on here. And it's been such a pleasure to chat with you about your work and your skills and your experiences and your new business. So yeah, it's very exciting.
Thank you.
See you. Bye, everyone. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Thank you for joining today's conversation. This community, these topics, and the stories I share are not possible without all of you being part of the journey. If you are interested in getting more support for your own personal process, head on over to my website, lisadeyoungcoaching.com, to book a consultation call with me. Or you can sign up for a free course there as well. And as always, please like, subscribe, and share this podcast with your friends. Lots of love for the week, and see you next time.